Welcome back.
Welcome back, guys.
To the Flick Tricks podcast.
I'm Allison.
And I'm Jane.
How are you, Jane?
I'm good. Weird time.
Weird time.
Weird time.
Still weird.
Still weird.
Full disclosure, if you listened to our Twilight episode last week,
it's the same day for us.
It's the same day for us. This is
mere minutes after we finished recording.
We're on a roll, you guys.
We're on a roll. We're not going to stop now. We watched them all in one day. We're recording them all in one day. But we wanted to spread out the content.
Yeah.
Keep you guys on it.
And also, I don't know if you guys are going to be interested in listening to a two-hour episode.
2 hour. We knew we couldn't get it down to an hour.
No.
No way. I mean, just reading the Wikipedia.
How long was the last episode?
Over 50 minutes.
See?
No way. No way. So, this week, we're doing Breaking Dawn Part 1 and Part 2.
Yep.
So, basically, just Breaking Dawn.
Yep.
But, oh boy howdy, a lot happens.
A lot of weird stuff happens.
We get pedophile Jacob.
Pedophile Jacob is so gross.
We get to really, really see that Stephenie Meyer is a Mormon, and she did write this. You know what I mean? It was like, okay, sex till marriage, he's 110, he's a virgin, all right. But it's like, the baby fetus debate is beyond.
Beyond.
So before we get started, Jane, you want to close the door in case my roommates come home?
Ooh. We're ready to roll.
Ready to roll, you guys. All right.
All right. So the plot, Breaking Dawn, Part 1. Let's see who the director of this one is.
This would have been 2011?
Yes, I believe so. Let's see. Yep. 2011. Eclipse come out the year before. Breaking Dawn Part 2 would come out the year after. This is directed by Bill Condon. I believe
he directed
Breaking Dawn Part 2.
I believe so, yes.
So he is the only director of the Twilight series to get
And can I just say, okay, so every movie up until Breaking Dawn Part 2 is produced by Summit. But the last one is produced by Lionsgate.
Yeah, and it's so obvious.
It's so different.
It's so different. We can talk about it more when we get there, but it's so different. So the budget for this, only $110 million.
Oh, wow.
Pretty low.
What'd they make?
$712.2 million.
Jesus Christ.
That was the box office. So, yeah, that's worldwide. Okay, so the plot. Bella Swan is preparing for her wedding. I don't know why they always tell us the full names. During the reception, Jacob Black, who had quickly left town upon receiving an invitation to Bella and Edward Cullen's wedding, returns. While dancing with Jacob in the woods, away from everyone, we're just going to skip the whole wedding, apparently. They have a wedding. That's the first part. The first part is they actually get married.
And her ring is hideous.
Hideous. Her engagement
horrible.
Ring is
horrible. So gross.
And it's really funny, though, because we get to see her high school friends, which means Anna Kendrick's back. And Anna Kendrick's being like, so do you think she'll be showing? And everyone's like, she's not pregnant. And she's like, all right, married at 19, sure.
Me,
I'm for sure. So Bella admits that she and Edward plan to consummate their marriage on their honeymoon while she is still human.
Jacob is pissed.
Yeah, he is. Jacob becomes furious knowing that such an act could kill her. Sam and other pack members restrain Jacob before he phases. After the wedding, the couple spends their honeymoon on Isle Esme.
Isle Esme.
So they go to Rio.
Yeah, which is where Edward almost killed himself.
Yeah, so Rio is where Edward was staying before he went to Italy to die. So, you know, good time to return. He comes to Rio. They go to Rio, and he's like, she's like, oh, we're not staying? And he's like, no, we're going to Isle Esme.
And they didn't tell anyone where they were going.
In the middle of the night, full throttle on a boat that Edward's driving.
It's really dangerous to go boating at night.
Yeah, very safe. Edward, he really cares about Bella's safety, and he can help. So, they have sex. It's crazy!
Crazy, you guys! We've been waiting for this for 4 movies!
It's insane! The sex is so intense. They break the headboard. He breaks the headboard, like, immediately.
Yeah, they, like, the you're entire like, room is just destroyed.
And you're like, oh, he's strong. But also, you're kind of like, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of hot.
Like, okay, Edward. And then, okay, so the next morning, Bella wakes up. Chigurh got feathers everywhere. Beautiful. Because he destroyed all the pillows. Edward realizes that Bella has numerous bruises and is upset at himself for hurting her. I just want to say, though, bruises? You thought you were going to kill her.
Yeah, bruises are small potatoes.
Small potatoes. Honestly, you should be proud of yourself. And she does not care.
No.
So Bella insists that she enjoy the experience. I believe Bella's exact words were something like, as far as human sex goes, I don't think it gets any better than that.
You have nothing to compare it to,
nothing
Bella.
Nothing to compare it to. but what we do know is that Bella likes it rough.
Yeah.
That's what we do know.
Very apparent.
Immediately. We learn, okay, Bella is into kinky sex. First thing, we're 10 minutes into this movie. We're more like 20 minutes in this movie at this point. This movie has a lot. So they're really tightening up this plot synopsis. Okay, so Edward vows not to make love. I wish they'd just say have sex.
I know, I don't like it.
Make love again until she becomes a vampire. 2 weeks after, okay, also then we get this whole montage of the rest of their honeymoon where they're not having sex, which is so funny because that's what the honeymoons are for.
It is really funny. It's a very good montage.
And they're on a private island.
And that's like, a good bit. That is a good bit.
And they play chess like 7 times and Bella just loses every time. It's so good. And she has this dream. I don't think they're going to talk about it. But she has this dream where she beats him at chess and then they have sex again. And you're like, wow, they are going to have sex. And you're like, oh, it's a dream. Of course it is. Bella could never beat Edward at chess. He's 110.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He lived through times where that's all you had to do.
Exactly. It's like, Bella's not got a chance against Edward. We should have known it was a dream the minute she beat Edward at chess. I was like, is he letting her win? No. So, 2 weeks after the wedding, Bella vomits after waking and notices that her period is late. This is also a very funny bit.
Yeah.
So, Alice and Carlisle call Bella, asking if she's alright, because Alice is like, what's wrong? I feel, I sense, my Bella senses are tingling.
My Bella senses.
She states that she is not completely sure and realizes she is pregnant.
No test.
No test. Also, here's a hilarious bit. Edward she's on the phone with Carlisle and he's like, where's Edward? Is he okay? And she's like, I'm not sure. Can vampires go into shock? And Edward has just been standing in the same place for like 4 minutes, like not moving at all. And it's literally so funny. And I don't think it's supposed to be funny at all.
But it's hilarious.
But this is, by far, I'm already like, wow, this movie is already the best of the best so far. Like, yeah. So far, this one's my favorite, I think.
Yeah, I love this one.
It's like they were just like, we know this is stupid. Let's just have some fun with it.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. Everyone seems like they're having a better time shooting this movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think they all, like, became friends by this point.
Yeah, well, at this point, I think Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart were dating.
Yeah.
Or that might have been an eclipse, but either way, it just feels like the writing gets a lot better. I mean, it's still not great, but, you know, you're only as good as what you're adapted.
They have a lot of money now.
Yes, and it just feels like the writing has gotten a lot better, and it also just seems like the makeup team has gotten a lot better.
Oh my god,
like,
yes.
Like, every movie the makeup gets better. So in this one, they're like, okay, they don't have to look, like, sickly pale all the time, do they? They don't. And it's so good, and everyone just seems like they're having a way better time. Yeah. Honestly, Bella's so tan, she looks like a goddess.
It's true, she looks beautiful in this movie.
She, like, the pregnancy glow is already starting to set in. 12 hours after she found out she was pregnant. Because that baby does grow fast, don't he? So, Edward worried, predicts that Bella will not survive the pregnancy. He tells her that Carlisle should remove the baby. She refuses, as she wants to keep her child, and convinces Edward's sister, Rosalie, to act as her bodyguard. They fly back home to Forks, Washington. To be fair, this is another one of those movies where you're like, Bella, you are so stupid.
Dumb.
Just get rid of it.
Just get rid
of it. It's what everyone thinks should happen. Except for Rosalie.
Yeah,
and when has Rosalie ever been
this
right?
This baby can kill her. And also, it's never happened before, so no one knows what's gonna happen.
Exactly. Everyone's like, this is not a good idea. Edward's like, I don't want this baby. Okay. So, Though Bella has only been pregnant for 2 weeks, the baby rapidly grows. So she's like 5 months pregnant in 2 weeks, basically.
Yeah.
Not good for your bod.
No, and the baby is devouring her.
Yeah. So, but they don't figure that out, even though they've all been alive for centuries. And Carlisle's a literal doctor. They can't figure out that maybe the fact that the baby is a vampire has something to do with why she's handling it so poorly. But hey, it's okay because Jacob rushes over to the Coens' house. Bella, now heavily pregnant, is pale and underweight. Jacob, upset by Bella's failing health, says that the Carlisle should terminate the pregnancy as soon as possible so that Bella may survive. Bella ignores Carlisle's medical advice and Alice's visions, continuing her pregnancy. Alice is like, I've seen it, you'll die. And she's like, I don't care. As her pregnancy progresses, the quality of her health declines rapidly. Then, as she starts drinking, okay, so Jacob at one point is like, basically like, I bet the baby's killing her because it's sucking out her blood. And everyone's like, now hold on.
I'm like, wait a minute.
Now you might be onto something. This is something we've never considered.
And we're vampires.
And so, we're too close to the situation. So, that she starts drinking blood out of a freaking
to-go cup
with a straw. Again, hilarious.
It's really funny.
So, as she starts drinking human blood to satisfy the baby's vampiric thirst, she improves rapidly. The pregnancy progresses at an alarming rate, and as the half-vampire, the fetus is far more accelerated than a human one, and so Edward is able to bond with it by reading its thoughts.
Ugh.
So now Edward's on board with the pregnancy. Because he's like, the baby's not evil. I thought the baby was evil. He says, I believe his exact words are, I thought it was like me, but it's like you, pure and good.
Ugh.
And you're like, Edward, I love, this is my favorite part about Edward, that the whole, all movies, he's like, I'm evil, I'm bad, I'm going to hell. And then like you're like, Edward, you've never done one bad thing this whole movie. The worst thing you ever did was leave Bella in movie two, and that was just for a good reason.
Yeah.
He's like, ugh, I'm horrible. I'm going to hell. And you're like, Edward, shut up. Okay. So, Bella is sharing her baby's names with Edward and Jacob. By the way, I believe EJ is the name it will be if it's a boy.
She thinks it's a boy.
And she says, EJ will be its name if it's a boy for Edward Jacob. I was like, two guys that you were in love with.
So the guys that you want to fuck.
You're going to name your baby after that?
Gross.
All right. Fuck Charlie, I guess. So Edward Jacob, and then if it's a girl, Renesmee. For her mom's name, Renee, and Edward's mom name, Esme.
I hate it so much.
It's literally a horrible,
it's
horrible
the dumbest thing I've ever heard. How many people named their babies with name combinations?
How many people's babies are named Renesmee because of this movie?
I know that Bella was like the number one baby name whenever Breaking Dawn came out.
I cannot believe how much impact this has had.
No, we were talking about this whenever we were commenting on how ugly her engagement ring is. We were like, how many people got that exact same engagement ring?
It's too many.
Too many.
Too many.
It's hideous.
Okay, so here we go. She's sharing her baby names when her backbone suddenly breaks.
Yeah, it's freaky intense.
It's really like, crack, and you're like, whoa! We were just talking about how horrible your baby's names were. And she collapses. It's literally some exorcist.
It is. It's scary.
And she looks bad, too. She looks terrifying. They realize that Bella cannot cope with the pregnancy and that the baby is suffocating. So they begin to perform a C-section on her. Rosalie begins the procedure as Carlisle is out getting blood. So Carlisle... Okay, also here's the other thing. They've all been watching over Bella for so long that they haven't been hunting. So they're, like, starving to death. Mm-hmm. And so, basically, they decide to go in, like, shifts to hunt. But the day that Bella goes into labor is Carlisle and Esme and Jasper are out hunting.
Mm-hmm.
So, not good. They're not there.
The doctor's not there.
Yeah. So... Rosalie begins the procedure as Carlisle's out getting blood, but due to her hunger, because she also hasn't been eating,
yeah,
the blood on the blade tempts her greatly. Jacob stops her as Edward picks up the blade and finishes the procedure. In agony, Bella goes unconscious. After the procedure, Bella wakes up and sees her newborn daughter and chooses Renesmee as the baby's name, although we already knew that was going to be a baby name. before further laboring. Jacob and Edward do everything they can to revive her, all to no avail. So Edward had a backup vial of his venom ready to inject into her heart at a moment's notice.
So he doesn't have to bite her.
Well, I think he doesn't...
Oh, because of the treaty, right?
Well, yes, that's one, because he's not going to be biting her. And also, I think the other thing is, he doesn't really care about biting her. I think it's more like, he needs to immediately, like, because it takes longer. If your heart's not pumping blood...
Gotcha.
Like, it needs to get to the heart to get through the whole body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how blood works, guys. So, it all circulates through the heart. So, if he just pumps it into one of her veins, it could take longer. So, I think he has the syringe to, like, basically...
Speed up the fact.
If something like this were to happen, which it did. So, he injects her in the heart in a very Pulp Fiction-esque scene.
Mm-hmm.
He just shoves a needle in her heart. They should have got adrenaline, though. That's like stupid. He ejects her heart with his venom to transform her into a vampire, but their attempts appear to fail. Jacob runs outside of the house, feeling remorseful. Seth and Leah appear, fearing that Bella will not survive, and tell the pack. Then, also, this is so sad. This is a sad part, because everyone else is just like, okay, Bella's dead.
Mm-hmm.
But Edward's like, she's not dead. He literally won't accept that she's dead.
It's
like,
really sad.
He just keeps being like, you're gonna wake up. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. And he's biting her all over her body. And he's like, she's gonna wake up. It's totally, it's gonna be fine. And everyone's like, give it up, Edward. She's dead. And he's like, she's not dead. No one cares about the baby at all. So, except Rosalie.
Rosalie is so happy.
This is Rosalie's ideal situation. Bella died and she gets to have a baby. Amazing. So, distraught, Jacob goes back inside and attempts to kill Renesmee. But! When they look into each other's eyes, he sees all the future versions of her and decides not to kill her, imprinting on her instead. Yep. So his thought is, I won't kill her. I'll have sex with her. All right.
But not right now.
He's like,
but when she's a grown-up.
But she's kind of hot at 18. Luckily, that will only take... we'll talk about that later, won't we?
My ideal situation.
My ideal situation. Everyone's situations are coming together quite nicely. Mine is Edward and Bella's, who are the people we're the most invested in, right? Imagine if this was from, like, Rosalie's perspective. It would be like a lose that Bella wakes up. So, when the werewolves learn of Bella's laboring, they attack the Cullens' house in an attempt to kill the baby, fearing it would become too great a threat. Edward, Alice, and Jasper defend their home with the help of Leah and Seth, and are later assisted by Carlisle, Esme, and Emmett, who show up way too late. Jacob then runs outside to stop the fight and transforms into his wolf self. Sam and Jacob shortly communicate with each other telepathically.
Yep.
Edward reads Jacob's mind, announcing that Jacob has imprinted on Renesmee, and that since the wolf's most absolute law is to not harm anyone who has been imprinted on, they leave.
It's so gross.
I love how they're like, it's okay, Bella can be turned, we'll let that go. But then they're like, she gets pregnant, and they're like, oh, we have to kill the baby. And then Jacob's like, I imprinted her. And they're like, all right, I guess we won't kill the greatest evil that's ever come around. And I was like, I imprinted on the Antichrist. Damn it, we can't kill him. Bella is cleaned and dressed. Edward's venom, they think... Okay, so here's the thing. At first, they think she's dead.
Yeah.
But then... And I think in the book, they think she's dead, too. But in the movie, Carlisle's, like, knows that she's not dead.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, no, it's just, like... Because he gave her morphine, but the morphine took way too long. And then when it was mixed with the venom, it basically just caused Bella to go into, like, a coma.
Yeah.
So, like, that's what's happening. So she's not dead. They know that. But Edward's venom begins to work in her body. Her bite marks heal, her broken back and chest repair, and her figure returns to normal. When her eyes open, they are blood red. So, that's the
Breaking
end.
Dawn Part 1.
But wait, apparently there's a post-credit scene that we didn't watch.
What?
Because I didn't watch it. I did definitely not watch all the way through the credits. In a post-credit scene, Aro and his brothers, Marcus and Caius, receive a letter from Carlisle announcing that the Cullens have a new member of the family. Aro informs his brother that his feud with the Cullens is not yet over, as they have something he wants. Which I believe is Flash House.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another thing, too. Through the whole movie, basically the Volturi are trying to recruit Edward and Alice because they have really good powers.
Yeah, Edward can read people's thoughts.
And Alice can see the future, right? So they're trying to, like, get them to join the Volturi in Italy, and they keep saying, like, no, 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 like, we have a family. So Aro, I guess this is what he's referring to. He's referring to the fact that he wants their power.
Yeah, and he thinks that if they don't have, if they didn't have a family, then they would join, because that's the only thing holding them back.
Which is not right, but hey. Okay, so, Jane, what do you give this one?
I had a great time watching this.
Me too.
Probably like a 7 on the enjoyment scale.
Yeah. Listen, honestly, it's a lot better than the other movies.
Yeah.
I give it like probably a 6 or 7.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's my, in my opinion, my favorite one. It's the most wacko one.
It's crazy.
You get sex. Deathbed pregnancy. You get like...
Pedophile Jacob.
Pedophile Jacob. Bella looks like shit, and then she looks really good. Like, it is so insane.
It's a roller coaster ride.
It's a roller coaster ride, and honestly, my favorite one, for sure.
It's so fun. I love this one.
So this one, I could not pick one review for it.
Okay.
Because like I said in last week's episode, these are either like really funny because they're so angry, or they're really funny because they love them so much. So I decided to go ahead and do both of them. Mm-hmm. So this is the first one. It's an angry one.
Okay.
It's a 1 out of 10. Narcissistic powerlessness. The vampire boy looks like a male prostitute, and the werewolf boy looks like a victim of fetal alcohol syndrome.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yet these are the least shocking fantasies dwelling in the hearts of adolescent girls and women over 40. This is the second Twilight movie I have seen, and as far as I can tell, the heroine, Bella, has made no attempt to find an academic, artistic, or athletic passion, nor has she attempted any other type of pursuit of achievement of learning. She... Yep.
They have a good science program.
I know. They have a good science program. For what, Bella? She appears to be somewhat petulant and extremely selfish, playing the vampire boy and the werewolf boy off against each other, and the two romantic rivals are too damn stupid to realize this. The vampires in these films are all frozen at approximately age 17 in physical appearance and emotional development. As far as I can tell, only one vampire has a job, yet somehow they all have buttloads of money for trophy homes and private islands and private jets. At age 17, Bella is willing to become... This is also kind of a review for all of them. You kind of, like, lumped all of it, I guess. At age 17, Bella is willing to become a permanently stunted herself at her own narcissistic stage of development. She's also not 17. She's, like, 19. She's almost 12.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming a vampire for all eternity on the basis of the mystique and male prostitute sexiness of the vampire boy. It's the height of romanticism in our culture to fantasize about a 17-year-old girl who don't know any better, irrevocably trying their fates to creepy, immature older guys. Vampires and werewolves fight huge battles to protect Bella from either bad vampires or bad werewolves. Bella takes no action to help defend herself. She is an object to be revered and protected. Of course, this all culminates in Bella getting pregnant, because if the ideal of femininity is the elimination of personal achievement and expression, then the crowning achievement of womanhood is to make babies, even if the baby is a blood-sucking demon spawn. The traditional adolescent protagonist in films and movies undergo a conflict or has an adventure and along the way gains wisdom and maturity that helps their character make their way in the adult world. Juno and Rushmore typify this concept. None of that is in Twilight, that's for sure.
I like how they compare it to Juno and Rushmore.
I know. Bella will remain twisted and stunted, just as the American imagination has been twisted and stunted by economic deterioration and religious authoritarianism.
Oh.
I know. trigger warning for the word rape coming up. You know, I just want to learn those things. In a sentence, casually. Besides being a major mind rape for adolescents with emotional vulnerabilities, parents should note that this film has a very graphic and extremely bloody C-section birth scene for Bella's hellspawn blood-sucking demon vampire baby.
I mean, they should also know that there's a really intense sex scene with very kinky sex.
Honestly, kind of surprises wasn't rated R.
Yeah, no, that scene is like...
A bit surprised.
I was like, I can't even imagine being like 13 years old and like...
Bella's like on his dick.
Yeah.
Okay, so... This one is a 10 out of 10.
Oh, no.
And it's called Leaves You Breathless. It's It's hard to describe this movie in just 1,000 words, but I'll try to keep it short.
This is literally an essay.
I'm a huge fan of the books, but I've been disappointed with the last two movies. The first one was it, though.
First one was the best one?
Oh, yeah. First one. So good. So my hopes weren't that high. I shouldn't have worried. Breaking Dawn blew me away from the first scene. Stewart is finally acting, which is one of the reasons why this movie is so much better than the others. She portrays Bella in a way that is so close to the book. She's the same! And it's wonderful to see her and Pattinson playing lovers that are so, so, so in love. The fact that Bill Condon, director, gave the happy couple so much time to be just that, happy, makes you really believe in their love, and it makes you understand why they can't live without each other. Such an important part, or the most important thing, I should say, but something that in the previous directors have failed in showing. This movie takes you from a beautiful wedding, complete with the most hilarious toast, Jessica and Charlie. Literally not funny at all.
No.
When we not laugh from the crowd or from me. Wonderful music, stunning dresses, and decorations of love that will touch everyone's heart. They literally just say vows.
Yeah.
There's no love decorations. Oh, they do make out for an incredibly long time.
At a wedding.
You're like, we're all watching. Like, the crowd has to, like, give them a standing ovation because they've been making out for so long.
Like, wrap it up.
Wrap it up. Decorations of love that will touch everyone's hearts to South America for a sexy, funny, exciting honeymoon where we see heartfelt smiles, kissing, cuddling, and teasing along with some epic headboard breaking.
Who wrote this?
Definitely someone over the age of 40.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It then settles back in Forks, where we get to witness the most terrifying pregnancy imaginable. The special effects team deserve an Oscar for the work they've done on making Stewart.
Do they really?
For the work they've done on making Stewart look like she's slowly fading away. The moments leading up to the birth scene are actually scarier than the scene itself. It really is a horror film towards the end, and some scenes maybe should have been rated R. It ends in the perfect place, such a natural and obvious cut. This is a part where it gets kind of sad because it's literally so heartfelt that you're like, you are delusional, ma'am. Here we go. I am so thankful that Breaking Dawn has been split into two parts, because I can't imagine even one scene in this part that could have been skipped. Condon is a genius. There was one, it might be coming up later, but it's like, yes, it is. Later, there's one coming up, which is seriously, like, they go through the list of being like, thank you, Stephanie Meyer. Thank you. All the directors get a special thank you. All the act. It's like if they're giving, like, their Oscar speech and being like, thank you. And it's, like, literally just some random fan. I love it. Okay.
That's so good.
Part two,
the last part.
You thought it was over? Not even close. This one had a budget of $1.36.2 million, and the box office was $8 to $9.7 million. And it was indeed directed by Bill Condon, and it was indeed produced by
Lionsgate. So weird that they changed it.
Yes.
And it's so obvious.
I know. So from the very first moment of this, you're like, the cinematography's really different.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole feel of the movie's different.
Like, usually it starts with, like, some stupid forest cut where Bella reads some poetry or something.
Yeah.
Not here. Okay. So here we go. What? Bella, who has just given birth, awakens from her human... Do you think they shot this all at once?
They would have to.
I mean, maybe not, but I feel like it would just help.
I feel like it would suck if they didn't.
It would just make sense. Keep going. Film the whole thing, break it into two parts.
I mean, I think that's what they did with Harry Potter.
Oh, I think that's what they did with Harry Potter, too. Bella, who has just given birth, awakens from her human to vampire transformation and is introduced to her daughter, Renesmee. But not after she has to go hunting, because she can't be around her daughter yet, basically. Because
she would eat it.
So they go on this weird hunting thing where she and Edward, like, run a lot.
Yeah, and it's kind of supposed to be like, ooh,
cute. And it kind of is.
It kind of is. is.
We're making fun of it, but I'm gonna be honest. I enjoyed it. She's introduced to her daughter, Renesmee. The rest of the Cullens and Jacob stay nearby.
Jacob is just there because he wants to fuck the baby bad.
And when Jacob acts possessively towards Renesmee, she literally is like, "What? Why do you care? What is wrong with you? It's my daughter." And then she realizes that Jacob explains, Bella learns he has imprinted on her, making her furious until Jacob explains what imprinting is. She already knows what imprinting is.
It's still weird, Jacob.
It's still weird. She's like, I haven't even had her for 2 minutes, and you've already got some weird wolfy hold on her?
True.
Meanwhile, Bella's father, Charlie, has been trying to contact the Cullens for updates on Bella's health because they told her that she was really sick on a desert island.
Poor Charlie.
Carlisle comes to believe that they have to leave Forked Washington to protect their identities, especially because of Charlie. Jacob, desperate to not lose Renesmee, visits Charlie and tells him that Bella is alive and well, but had to change in order to get better. Jacob also tells Charlie he doesn't live in the world he thinks he lives in, but says nothing about vampires. He then phases into a wolf. Charlie then visits the Cullen house and meets Renesmee, believing she is a niece of Edward's whom Bella and Edward adopted. Now, this just makes no sense.
No.
She grows super fast, and they already know this. How are you going to be like, oh, we got rid of that baby and adopted a 4-year-old, and then we got rid of that 4-year-old and we adopted a 16-year-old?
And you're just going to keep telling that story?
And he's going to be like, stop getting rid of the children you adopt. How are they going to explain that? Also, how is this going to make them not leave? Like, Charlie's only, like, 40.
Yeah.
Is she just going to remain young forever? They never touch on this. What are they going to do? He has to find out about vampires.
Yeah. No, does he ever? I don't think he does either.
I don't remember in the book whether or not he does.
He didn't in the movie.
He did not in the movie. He only found out about werewolves. I mean, maybe it's like he can put it together and keep
but
quiet.
I feel like someone needs to lay it out for him.
I feel like someone needs to go, Charlie, your daughter's a vampire and you need to shut up about it. Okay? Or you're going to die and she's going to die. Okay. Here we go. Charlie then visits the Cullen house and meets Renesmee. Okay, yeah. Afterwards, the Cullens are able to stay in Forks. Doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make any sense.
Several months pass with Carlisle monitoring Renesmee's rapid growth. On an outing in the woods, a bitter Irina sees Renesmee from a distance and assumes she's an immortal child without asking any questions. Immortal children were vampires who were changed in childhood, and because they could not be trained nor restrained, they destroyed entire villages.
It's like Claudia from Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah, so it's sort of like a thing that they were, basically for a while, the Volturi, like, vampires were upset they can't have kids. Vampires can't have kids because they're dead. Although, this
but Edward, a vampire and a human can have a kid.
Apparently, as we found out. So, basically, they let vampires turn children. Or, like, people who had children who then became vampires could turn their own children.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted to have kids, right? And this way they could have a kid forever. Although that seems selfish to me.
And also seems horrible.
But it doesn't go well because they're babies. And they don't have, like, a rational brain. And they can't be trained. So, that does kind of set up the idea that you don't grow emotionally after you're turned.
Yeah, that you don't
like, that your brain doesn't
age.
Develop anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you can learn more information.
Yeah, which is interesting because I'm just thinking about Interview with the Vampire now, that their brains do, like, change.
Here's what's interesting, like, if you think about, it makes Bella and Edward's thing a lot better because it just means Edward's, like, a genius 17-year-old.
Yeah.
Even though, because before it's like, oh, this man is like got the experience of a man of 109. But it's really just more like, he has the brain of a 17-year-old.
He's just a 17-year-old who's lived 110 years as a 17-year-old.
Yeah. So, you know, that's why he's so the way he is. They definitely shouldn't have a kid. But hey, also they look so old.
I know.
They look like parents. Okay, so, let's see, right? Okay. So they were eventually executed, as were the parents who created them, and the creation of such children was outlawed. Irina goes to the Volturi. So Irina is, like, their cousin.
Yeah.
Which...
She's from Alaska.
Yeah. So you learn about that, like,
she has wedding, like
two sisters. Yeah, she has two sisters who will come up later, I'm sure. There's a lot of new characters in this movie. So they go to the Volturi. She goes to the Volturi to report what she has seen. Alice sees the Volturi and Irina coming to kill the Cullens and instructs the others to gather as many witnesses as they can to testify that Renesmee is not an immortal child. The Cullens begin to summon witnesses, such as the Denali family. One of the Denali, Eleazar, later discovers that Bella has a special ability, a powerful mind shield which had protected her from Edward's mind reading even when she was a human, and which she is taught to extend to protect others from vampire powers. As some of their potential witnesses are attacked and prevented from supporting the Cullens, Carlisle and Edward realize that they may have to fight the Volturi. Their witnesses ultimately agree to stand in battle, having realized the Volturi increased their guard by falsely accusing Covens of crimes, destroying them, and then recruiting the vampires with gifts. So this is what we talked about earlier, where, like, the reason they're coming to destroy the Cullens is, for one, because they think they have an immortal child. Yeah. But that may not even matter, right? They're trying to intimidate people who are going to say, like, oh, that's not true. Mm-hmm. They want Edward and Alice, and so what they'll do is they'll go to Covens and they'll accuse them of crimes, which aren't real, but then they'll accuse them of crimes, kill everyone except like one or two of them that have really good gifts, and then be like, if you want to live, you have to come work for us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they're planning to do with Alice and Edward.
And then they're going to find out about Bella's powers.
Exactly. So Alice peaces out. She's like, leaves a note that's like, bye, get witnesses. And that's it. Everyone's like, okay, Alice abandoned us? Not cool. Alice and Jasper, I should say. So, the Volturi arrive. Oh, there's also more stuff that's happening. So, also at the same time, this is not written down, but Alice leaves this, like, hidden note for Bella that Bella finds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically telling her, like, that someone has some stuff for her that Jasper and Alice set up for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to meet with this guy, and she gets this stuff, and basically there is a passport for Renesmee and Jacob.
Yeah.
And fake birth certificates and nothing else. So she realizes that Alice must have seen a vision in which they all die, but maybe Renesmee and Jacob can live.
Mm-hmm.
So this is also something that Bella's been dealing with on the back burner that nobody else knows about. Yeah.
And she tells Bella about it, just Bella, just because Bella. No one can read her mind.
Exactly. And so, yeah, so she basically prepares this, like, package for Jacob and Renesmee for them to escape during the battle if they have to.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like, gonna tell Jacob about it, but not till the very last possible moment. But it's way too late. So the Volturi arrive, prepare for battle, led by Aro, who is eager to obtain the gifted members of the Cullen Coven as part of his guard. Aro is allowed to touch Renesmee and is convinced that she is not an immortal child. So Renesmee has this power to show people things. So Aro can see stuff if he touches someone. Renesmee can show stuff if she touches someone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she has powers. Irina is brought forth and takes full responsibility for her mistakes, leading to her immediate death.
It's a lot.
Yeah, in front of her sisters, who also their mother was killed because their mother had an immortal child.
Mm-hmm.
So, Aro still insists that Renesmee may pose a risk in the future, validating his claim that battle is necessary. Before any violence, Alice shares with Aro her vision of the battle that is to come during, so then, this is like, they're not going to go into all of it. So Alice touches him, and then she goes, oh, you don't care, like, you're going to fight us no matter what. She mm-hmm. basically sees a future in which she's like, it doesn't matter what I show you, you'll always want to fight us. So they do fight. Carlisle dies. I believe Esme dies.
Yeah.
Jasper dies. I think that's it from the yeah. Cullen family.
Yeah.
Multiple werewolves die.
Yeah.
But
Sam dies.
Sam dies. Seth dies.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe Jacob and Renesmee get away. And then Edward and Bella both live, and they kill all the Volturi. Plus, like, Jane and her brother.
Mm-hmm.
So they win the battle. But a lot of people die, right? And then it's like, dream sequence.
JK, JK.
It was all Alice's vision. And this is really interesting because when I, like, so in the book, none of that happens. She just, like, you're aware it's a vision the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened in the movie theater, nobody knew that it was going to happen. And so everyone was like, oh my God. Like, basically, as soon as Carlisle's head came off, you were like, what is happening? but anyway, she shows him a vision in which both sides sustained heavy casualties, including Aro, who would also die. Aro believes her, giving Alice and Jasper an opportunity to reveal their witness, Nahul, a half-mortal, half-vampire, just like Renesmee. The witness proves that he is not a threat, supporting the notion that Renesmee is not a threat. Basically, he tells them that he grew up really rapidly, and then after being alive for 7 years, stopped growing.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Volturi unhappily leave, explaining that there will be no battle here today. Back at the Cullen home, Alice glimpses the future, seeing Edward and Bella together with Jacob and a fully matured Renesmee also together.
Weird.
Yes. Also, here's what's weird too. Jacob still ages.
Yeah.
Jacob's not immortal.
Yeah.
So Renesmee's not going to age, but then Jacob is?
That doesn't work.
No. Also, it's going to take like 7 years. He's like, oh, thank goodness, this is perfect.
Yeah, I thought it was going to take 18 years.
Nope. So, Edward reads Alice's mind and feels relieved that Renesmee has Jacob to protect her. Alone in the meadow, Bella pushes her mental shield away and finally allows Edward to see in her mind, showing him every moment she and Edward shared together, and the two share a kiss after Bella telling Edward, nobody has ever loved anybody as much as I love you. As both Edward and Bella say that they will love each other and can be together forever.
As a Thousand Years by Christina Perry plays.
And you're kind of like crying in the club because you're sort of kind of liking it.
Also, there's some kinky vampire sex in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Like, okay, so they get this house, and I believe this might be before she even sees Renesmee for the first time, which is kind of, like, messed up.
Yeah, no, I think it is, too.
But they go and have sex, and she's like, wow, you really were holding back before. And then she's literally, I'm going to try and quote this as best as I can, because it's really uncomfy. She says, how are we going to do this? We never get tired. We never have to catch our breath. We never have to eat. Like, how are we going to stop? And then Edward says, when Rosalie and Emmett first got together, it was so bad that we couldn't be around them for a decade.
Because they wouldn't stop fucking. Because
they wouldn't stop fucking. And then Bella says, I think we're going to be worse. And Edward says, oh yeah, way worse.
You have a kid.
I know. I'm like, you have a baby. I mean, to be fair, they really just got to be busy for like 7 years. But also, she's human, so she does sleep. And so she can live off both human or vampire diet.
Yeah.
So I assume she'll live off human diet. And she has to sleep and stuff, so I guess they get, you know, all the nighttime.
Yeah.
And only for 7 years. When she's 18, she's moved out with Jacob.
Weird.
What a nice way. You get to have a kid and you only have to deal with them for 7 years.
Yeah, they lucked out on that.
I know. And you're a vampire. So, what do you give this one?
I give this one like a five.
I give it like a 5.2. It's not as good as part one. But still pretty good.
It's not as wacko as part
one. Honestly, I gotta be... Yeah, there's just way less happening. Honestly, I did almost cry when A Thousand Years came on.
Oh, me too.
I was like, they love each other. And then I was like, I hate myself for like being this. It's not good. It's, oh, but it is kind of good. Yeah, I also give it a 5. Okay, so I again have 2 reviews because I couldn't pick one. So this is a bad one. 1 out of 10. An honest and professional review.
Yep.
By saying I was disappointed with this movie is an understatement. The movie had potential. It had some good villains, Volturi, and an interesting premise, violating vampire law by creating an immortal child. And some background on the premise, immortal children are uncontrollable, as proved in the past. A fellow vampire sees Bella and Edward's daughter and reports them to the Volturi. The Volturi then set out to make a deal with the situation. Set out to deal, not make a deal. Bella and Edward are made aware of the Volturi's awareness and seek out witnesses to certify that Bella and Edward's child was born and not an immortal child. In short, the defense is gathering evidence as in a court of law. All of this makes sense. However, the problem we encounter is how it is all presented in the film. I've been able to summarize the plot in a paragraph, and in the film, it should have been summarized in about 10 to 15 minutes. This is not the case. The pacing of the film leaves a great deal to be desired. Nothing much except for filler materials happens for the first hour or so. No, it's not. We've been waiting 5 movies to see how this woman becomes a vampire. I don't think that's filler at all to make her do vampire things.
Yeah.
Also, the imprinting is pretty important.
Imprinting is weird and important.
Weird and important. Kristen Stewart's acting is dry, as in all the Twilight films. Edward is so stiff that he reminds me of the character Data from Star Trek The Next Generation. Jacob is the only character who has some emotion. The most disappointing aspects of the film have to be the last 30 minutes. Here we are treated with a good battle between good and evil. I admit, the battle was tense. Around 70% of the cast dies off. However, there is issues with the battle that turn me off completely. The first is that one of the good vampires takes his fist out and creates a fissure in the ground that swallows up the vampires on the battlefield. From a military standpoint, that action from this vampire was ludicrous, because he ends up killing most of his friends in the process and a very few Volturi. This is a vampire movie in which a guy has the ability to... You're criticizing
their battle strategy?
There is no battle strategy. They didn't get to have a montage of training. Unfortunately. Actually, they did. The second, the Volturi, especially the 3 elders, were such wimps. For being as powerful as they say they are, they all died very easily. The blonde one, Caius, was killed in about 3 seconds. The tall one, Marcus, was killed so fast I don't even know how he died. And then 2 vampires run at him, and he was dead. Aro fought with Edward and Bella for like 10 seconds until they locked his head off like a doll. To top it all off, the entire battle sequence was just a vision. When this twist came about, I felt robbed, because it felt the battle sequence was just included in the film to add some tension in an otherwise slow-paced film. In short, I can't see why, other than trying to rack in as much money as possible. Why Breaking Dawn was split into 2 films. The entire battle sequence could have been omitted in the film. If the battle scene wasn't a vision and a real actual fight, along with the Volturi putting up more of a fight, I feel like this movie could have been much better received. As it stands, it will only barely be enjoyed by Twilight fans. His complaint was that he wanted the battle to be real.
Ugh.
It's based on a book.
Yeah, the battle's not real in the book.
The battle doesn't happen in the book. And that's why it was so shocking to people who, like, were watching it. Okay. This one's... Love it. Loves it. And it's kind of, like, funny, but it's also kind of sad because they love it so much.
They're so genuine.
Yeah. 10 out of 10. Forever.
Ugh.
We live in a world full of fantasy. Fantasy that we can't explain sometimes. Everything has a purpose. Everything has its place. Everything has a forever. This is one forever that will last into the next life. It amazes me that 5 years ago, in 2008, this was also written in 2014, so 2 years after the movie. 5 years ago in 2008, we were introduced to a whole new world that was created by a 35-year-old writer who told a story of a mortal human being, that's what human being is, who was drawn into a world of vampires and werewolves. They also hyphenated werewolves. It's not.
Werewolves.
Not a hyphenated word. Nobody knew that it would end up with a sad, happy ending. We were mesmerized by the way that these movies and books have melted literally into our hearts. I don't know what that means. Melted literally into our hearts?
Literally melted?
Literally melted into our... They melted it into her heart.
Not figuratively, Allison.
It's literally is like in parentheses. Like she's trying to be like actually using the word correctly.
Yeah. But she's not.
There's no way you're actually using that word correctly. It's like we live in this world that I described a second ago, full of make-believe. But for the Twilight Saga, it was so real. The saga has been ingrained into our souls and left a chilling, so to speak, mark. As I was sitting there watching the movie, I was shocked by the way each part of it was so breathtaking. Each scene was so impactful. The books and movies have made a mark in us that no other franchise has left in us. The Twilight Saga will and always will and always be a part of our lives for many years, decades, and centuries to come, no matter how old we are.
Centuries.
I think this person might be a vampire.
I'm just kind of now getting that vibe, but I think that may be true. Oh, here come the thanks. Stephanie, thank you so much.
For first name basis.
For Stephanie, that's the author. Thank you so much for your hard work and for sharing with us the story of our lives. No, it's not the story of your life. Shut up! It's a wet dream that she wrote down. To the many directors, Catherine Hardwicke, Chris Weitz, David Slade, and Bill Condon, thank you for giving the vision to see Stephanie's work come alive. To Melissa Rosenberg, girl, you rock. Your words are Stephanie's words. Thank you for the craft that you have. That's the screenwriter, I think. To the composers.
Paramore.
Carter Burwell. Andre Desplat. Howard Shore. You guys are the epitome of the saga. Thank you for the music and for bringing artists like Linkin Park, Muse, Metric, Bruno Mars, and Green Day on board. The last thing I want to do before I close this great saga review, to the three people who gave us an enchanting vampire, Robert Pattinson, to the mortal who loved a vampire, who he is, and becoming the immortal that we loved, Kristen Stewart, and to the brown-nosed werewolf who gives his heart and soul, Taylor Lautner.
That's racist. That is not good.
Not how I would have worded it at all. Taylor Lautner, you guys are what the Twilight Saga is about. So, period. Let's start with Forever. I believe that was the end of his vow.
That's so sad.
I know, isn't it? Isn't it so sad? She thanked the composers.
Because they're reading the IMDb.
She literally said, whatever her name was, like, Melissa, you rock, girl. Like Melissa's, like, reading it. Like, Melissa's like, oh my god, thank you, somebody. This girl, who wrote that? Who is, like, okay, I'm sorry, but who is, like, so delusional that you think any of those people care about you? Like, you acting like that you know them.
Oh my goodness. Ooh. Wow.
Isn't it kind of sad?
It's kind of sad.
I told you. I think it really sums up Twilight.
I think it sums up, yeah, I think that I can't stop thinking about this.
I know. It really sticks with you.
It really does. I've been thinking about the imprinting thing so much. I'm like,
what's the logic? I'm convinced the imprinting thing only exists because she was like, we have to, like, have something for Jacob. Because, like, Jacob is too good of a guy to not give him anything. But then you, like, ruined his whole appeal.
Because he's a pedophile now.
I know.
It's weird.
Alright.
Alright, guys.
Dang.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Bye.